To turn with me to the Old Testament book of Judges. We're going to be in chapter 9, verses 1 through 57 of the book of Judges. Our sermon title is Bramble Fire and Millstones as we go verse by verse through the book of Judges in our series entitled The Quest for Rest in Days of Unrest. And because it's such a lengthy text, we'll kind of take it as we go reading the text in a broken up way to kind of tell the flow of the story. What we have in Judges 9 is something different than what we have looked at so far in the book of Judges. We have seen this recurring pattern of there is this rebelliousness on the part of the people, and then we've seen that there is an oppressor who comes and brings this kind of retribution, that the Lord sends this oppressor. And the people end up crying out for mercy, for relief of some kind. And God raises up a deliverer, a judge, that brings a rescue for the people. And then there is a rest for a period of time. And we've seen that there is this recurring cycle, this recurring pattern. And last time, when we looked at this, we said that it's actually not a pattern so much as it is a downward spiral. That there is a decline and a moral decline, and that the rest provided for by Gideon would be the last sort of rest that the land would have in the book of Judges. And we see that sort of inward rot and cancer set in the nation of Israel, and we see that within this story in chapter 9 of Abimelech. And we see that we know that there are enemies without of the people of God. There are enemies out there that might, you know, threaten our existence. That was certainly true in their day. There were the very real enemies of Midian and the Canaanites and the Moabites and others. But there is also the very real threat of enemies rising up within. Not just within ourselves, but among us. Paul talked to the Ephesian elders at Miletus and said, after I'm gone, there are going to be wolves that rise up from among you that tear apart the flock of God. And so we know the very real danger of enemies that rise as a part of the people of God and are a threat to the people of God, either through false teaching or through divisiveness and strife that they stir up for the people of God. And Abimelech is going to be a destroyer of Israel. Abimelech is not a judge by any stretch of the imagination, but is going to be someone who brings ruin upon Israel, and God's wrath and retribution falls upon Abimelech and those who partner with him. And so we want to look at this passage. We'll begin by looking at verses 1 through 6 about this story that comes from Shechem. I'll read. Now Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them, and to the whole clan of his mother's family, say in the ears of the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal rule over you, or that one rule over you? Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows who followed him. And he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the son of Jerubbaal, 70 men on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the leaders of Shechem came together, and all Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. So this is what I'm calling the plotting whispers of a favorite son in Shechem. The plotting whispers of a favorite son in Shechem. Now, Shechem has a long history in the nation of Israel that all the way back to Abraham, when he first settled in the promised land and didn't have a place, he had a partnership with the Shechemites and that lived among them. Shechem is at a crossroads, an intersection of trade routes that cross through the middle of Palestine. And so it separates the coastal plain there by the Mediterranean Sea from the hill country that is there. And it's situated between two big hills, big mountains, if you will, Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. Not only do we see Shechem in the story of the patriarchs with Abram and then later Jacob having a period of time there and some conflict with the Shechemites, the sons of Hamor, but we also see that Joshua, after the promised land, they have a covenant renewal ceremony there, and he sets up a pillar that's talked about in this passage there at Shechem by the big oak. And that when the people of God come into that land, in Deuteronomy, we see that he sets half the tribes up on one of the mountains, Mount Gerizim, and half of the tribes up on Mount Ebal. And from Mount Gerizim, the Levites read out all of the blessings of God's covenant. The people give their amen. They shout their amen to it. And then the other side echoes all of the curses that come from disobeying and breaking covenant with God. And so we see that this has been an important area in the land. But what's unusual about the passage is that the Shechemites are not pure Israelites. The Shechemites have kind of had a treaty with Israel. They've had a partnership with Israel for a long time. We don't see Joshua and them conquering Shechem, that Jacob and Abraham and others have lived there in Shechem. There's been intermarriage between the two so that they're part of us, but not really of us. And so they're not 100%, if you will, Israelites when it comes to them. And so Abimelech, we found, is a son of Gideon, or Jerubbaal, as he's called throughout chapter 9. And Abimelech is not a son by one of Gideon's many wives. This is the product of polygamy. Oh, that Gideon would have not been a polygamist. Oh, that Gideon would have never had a concubine in Shechem, that he had this son through. But he had this son through this concubine in Shechem, and he named him Abimelech, which means my father is king. And so here we have Abimelech going down to his relatives on his mother's side, not his father's side. And he's going to the Shechemites, and he says, now that Gideon's dead, essentially, let me put this bug in your ear. Do you want the 70 sons of Gideon all fighting over who's going to be the next king? Or wouldn't it be better for you if you had one of your relatives to rule over you? Wouldn't it be better for you if we just got rid of the 70 sons of Gideon and still had a son of Gideon, but someone who is also a relative of yours, reigning over this plot? So he's whispering into the ears of his mother's family, and they whisper into the ears of the leaders of Shechem so that they tell it on his behalf. And they're advocating for him. He says, remember also that I'm bone of your bone and flesh of your flesh. And they decide this is a pretty good idea. In fact, they're so excited about this that they take money and they take it from the house of their god. This is not Yahweh, but this is Baal Berith. This is the god of the Baal of the covenant. And so out of their idolatrous coffers, they take money to back Abimelech. And Abimelech uses that money to hire some thugs and some hooligans. So he's backed by an idolatrous cult, and he is enforced, or his muscle comes from an irreverent, worthless group of individuals that he's hired, mercenaries that are following after him. And he's supported by his own half-breed family rulers that come, that he's related to. And so what they do is they go to Ophrah, where Gideon had lived, where Gideon's family still lives. And they kill his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, 70 men on one stone, execution style. Maybe they don't want to spread the blood out. Perhaps they just all do it in one place there, on one stone. We don't know. But we know that the youngest of the young, one Jotham, was able to get away. He hid himself and he escaped the execution of all of the brothers. And then what all of the leaders of Shechem do is they gather around Shechem. They get at this ceremonial place there by the great pillar where Joshua and others had set up their covenant memorial for the covenant renewal. There at the great oak where they do their things. They anointed and had a coronation for Abimelech and made him king there at that place. There's irony here. Great irony here. The irony is this, that he is installed as king by the leaders of Shechem, by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. And the irony is that in Joshua chapter 24, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord." This is when Joshua says, "Choose you this day whom you're going to serve. And if you're going to serve the Lord, then serve Him in sincerity and faithfulness." Those two words are the very things that they don't have. They are not installing Him with good faith and integrity, which are the Hebrew words used in Joshua 24 and the Hebrew words that are used in our passage in Judges 9. In fact, you see this pillar. It says, "Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the terebinth that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, 'Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that he has spoke to us. Therefore it shall be a witness against you, lest you deal falsely with your God.'" So there at the stone that they used to memorialize their swearing allegiance to Yahweh, they are running away from Yahweh, acting without truth and without integrity, and this man is backed by a false god, Baal Berith, actually, which means, again, the Baal of the covenant. Secondly, we see in verses 7 through 21, the raised voice of a lone survivor on Mount Gerizim. The raised voice of a lone survivor on Mount Gerizim. Perhaps at the ceremony itself, we don't know, maybe the ceremony was over. But on a crag overlooking the town of Shechem, there at Mount Gerizim, which was the Mount of Blessing and not the Mount of Cursing, comes a warning. Comes a voice, and it is Jotham. In verse 7 it says, "When it was told to Jotham, he went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim and cried aloud and said to them, 'Listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went out to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, "Reign over us." But the olive tree said to them, "Shall I leave my abundance by which gods and men are honored and go hold sway over the trees?" And the trees said to the fig tree, "You come and reign over us." But the fig tree said to them, "Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees?" And the trees said to the vine, "You come and reign over us." But the vine said to them, "Shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees?" Then all the trees said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in good faith you are anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, Let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now therefore, if you acted in good faith and integrity when you made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house and have done to him as his deeds deserve, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian. And if you have risen up against my father's house this day and have killed his son, 70 men, on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem, because he is your relative. If you then have acted in good faith and integrity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Millo. And let fire come out from the leaders of Shechem and from Beth Millo and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer and lived there because of Abimelech, his brother. The raised voice of a lone survivor on Mount Gerizim. Jotham, the youngest of the young, comes out to a crag there on Mount Gerizim, far enough away that they can hear him, but he can get away. Because of the enemies there from Abimelech. And he calls out to them. And he tells them a fable. Kind of like one of Asaph's fables. It might have been even around already, and he makes use of this fable at this time. We're not sure. But the fable tells of a quest of the trees to look for a king to reign over them. And first they ask the olive tree if he'll reign over them, and then the fig tree, and then the vine. And all three of them refuse. They say, we're too productive to go and do such a thing. God has a use for them that is not what he's saying. They provide abundance, they bestow honor, they enjoy sweetness, they bear good fruit, they produce cheer. Then they ask a bramble, just briars and thorns that run along the ground. They ask a bramble if he'll reign over the trees. And he asks, are you really asking me in truth? And he agrees, he accepts. He says, come take refuge in my shade, but if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. The point is that the leaders of Shechem are the trees in this case. And the bramble, of course, is Abimelech. And in choosing Abimelech, the leaders of Shechem had acted wickedly and more so foolishly. They've coveted, they've murdered, they've acted without faith, without integrity, without gratitude for God or for Gideon, and without wisdom. The leaders of Shechem are the trees, and in anointing Abimelech king, they have asked for a bramble to rule over them. Like a bramble, Abimelech will provide them with no abundance. Like a bramble, Abimelech will bestow on them no honor. Like a bramble, with Abimelech, they will enjoy no sweetness. Like a bramble, Abimelech will bear no good fruit. Like a bramble, Abimelech will bring them nothing to cheer them. Brambles don't provide any shade for trees. They're far too low. For any tree to get under a bramble, it would have to stoop with its face into the dirt. They provide no shade, for it is low and is worthless. It is a danger, however, the brambles are for the trees, because one thing brambles are good for is burning. And if a fire gets caught among the brambles, even the great trees of the cedars of Lebanon are in danger from the wildfire that could come from them. So brambles are good for burning. They're not suited for reigning. He is the very essence of someone cursed by God, for briars and thorns are what come out of the ground in Genesis after the fall. The parable ends kind of with a pronouncement of judgment upon them if they have acted in treachery. He's basically saying, in time, it will be evident if you've acted in good faith and integrity as you've promised to do. In time, it will show if you've acted in what it was proper of the people of God before God. But also, he's saying, if they've not acted in good faith and integrity, then he's predicting that the two treacherous groups will turn on one another, and they will consume one another, and fire will come out and destroy each other. Brethren, I want you to see something. The people of Shechem have acted foolishly in choosing Abimelech to rule over them, and far too often people are still choosing people like Abimelech to rule over them. They're still acting foolishly. Now, Abimelech ruled over Israel for 3 years. For 3 years, I bet they mocked what Jotham said. I don't know, but I bet they mocked what Jotham has said. For 3 years, things seemed to be going well. But then in verse 23, I want you to see the silent spirit of strife sent by a sovereign God. The silent spirit of strife sent by a sovereign God. God sent an evil spirit. That's not something you normally read in the Bible, is it? God and evil spirits. God sent a demonic spirit. You remember that one thing Lucifer is, as Martin Luther said, he's God's devil. He goes only where God allows him to go, only where God permits him. And God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. Why would he do such a thing? Why would God sovereignly send an evil spirit between the two? Because these are the ones who dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem who strengthened his hands to kill his brother. This is retribution from God. This is vengeance, which God said is mine. God is bringing this retribution upon them. We'll get to this again later. But let's carry on with the story. And fourthly, we see the rebellious boast of a drunk loudmouth during happy hour at Baal Berith Bar. The rebellious boast of a drunk loudmouth during happy hour at the Baal Berith Bar. Verse 25, and the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops, and they robbed all who passed by them along the way. And it was told to Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, who is Abimelech and who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal, and is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him? Would that his people were under my hand. Then I would remove Abimelech. I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out. So after this evil spirit comes between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, there is strife between the two. And the way that the leaders of Shechem try to get Abimelech back. This is kind of the fire that comes from the leaders of Shechem, if you will. The fires that are attempting to destroy Abimelech. The first way that they try to get them back is in verse 25. They set ambushes of robbers and thugs along the trade routes. I told you that Shechem was an intersection of trade routes, and there would have been caravans and merchants that came through a lot of times. And so they robbed these caravans that would come through. And this did two things. It robbed Abimelech of revenue, and it also robbed Abimelech of his reputation. For the caravans and the merchants had to pay taxes as they'd come through. And so he wasn't able to get what they sold or money from what they sold. It cut down and hurt Abimelech because of that. It also hurt Abimelech because he's supposed to be ruler and he can't protect the people that are traveling through, so they'd stop traveling through. You don't keep going if you're going to get robbed after every time. So it looks bad for Abimelech. And then you have the second thing that happens is this outsider moves in. This man named Gaal, the son of Ebed. And a big holiday ensues. A holiday ensues because it's harvest time. And they harvest their grapes and they tread them out and they make wine and they hold a festival. This is what fertility cults do. And they hold this festival and they get drunk at the house of their god, it says. They're in El-Berith's house drinking, celebrating the God of fertility who's given them a great harvest. And fortified by liquid courage, they start bad-mouthing Abimelech. And Gaal speaks up. And he says, "Who is Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is not he the son of Jerubbaal? Is not Zebul, who is over Shechem as a governor that Abimelech has set, his officer? Serve the men of Hamor." That's, he's saying, if you'll let me be ruler over you, I'll get rid of Abimelech, I'll get rid of Zebul, and we'll go back to being Shechemites with our ancestor Hamor. Would that this people were under my hand, that I would remove Abimelech. I would say to Abimelech, "Crease your army and come out." So we move on in the story. And the next is this: the shut mouth of a rebel upstart at Shechem city gate. The shut mouth of a rebel upstart at Shechem city gate. Zebul was there that night in the bar at Baal-Berith. And Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed. His anger was kindled, and he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, "Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do." So Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies. And Gaal the son of Ebed went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city, and Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the mountaintops." And Zebul said to him, "You mistake the shadow of the mountains for men." Gaal spoke again and said, "Look, people are coming down from the center of the land, and one company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak." Then Zebul said to him, "Where is your mouth now, you who said, 'Who is Abimelech that we should serve him?' Are not these the people whom you despise? Go out now and fight with them." And Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived at Arumah. And Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell at Shechem. The shut mouth of a rebel upstart at Shechem's city gate. Zebul was there that night. And when he heard what Gaal had said in his boast and how they were attempting a coup over Abimelech, he secretly sent messengers out to Abimelech, who was in another town. And he gave him a suggestion. He said, "Why don't you take your men and set an ambush for Gaal?" And at night, that very night, while they were sleeping it off, the rest of them, Abimelech and four companies of men were setting up before it got daylight, and they were coming to take an ambush and siege Shechem. And when Gaal, you can kind of see him getting his coffee the next morning, strolling out to the city gates to overlook the fields. Maybe he's got a Danish in his hand. You don't know. Zebul comes up, strolls up beside him. He's not worried about him. Gaal says, "Those are people coming down from the mountaintops over there." Zebul says, "You're getting old. You need glasses. That's not people." He said, "No, there are people coming up from the diviner's oak." Now, and that's when Zebul, as one commentator said, he's probably been practicing this line all night. "Where's your mouth now? You who said this, they're coming to get you. Now you go out." He pushes him out, locks the gate. "You fight. Fight with Abimelech." And Abimelech kills Gaal, and Zebul drove out the rest of Gaal and his relatives from Shechem. His mouth, his arrogant boasts are shut. So this is the return fire from Abimelech, the bramble that is coming upon the people. Sixthly, I want you to see the vengeful orders of a wicked ruler upon Shechem's stronghold. The vengeful orders of a wicked ruler upon Shechem's stronghold. Verse 42. "On the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told. And he took his people and divided them into three companies and set an ambush in the fields. And he looked and saw the people coming out of the city. So he rose against them and killed them. Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, while the two companies rushed upon all who were in the field and killed them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He captured the city and killed the people who were in it, and he razed the city and sowed it with salt. When all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Berith. And Abimelech was told that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bundle of brushwood and took it up and laid it on his shoulder. And he said to the men who were with him, 'What you have seen me do, hurry and do as I have done.' So every one of the people cut down his bundle and, following Abimelech, put it against the stronghold. And they set the stronghold on fire over them, so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women." The vengeful orders of a wicked ruler upon Shechem's stronghold. Let me ask you a question. Is a king really a king if he doesn't have any people to rule over anymore? Normally, when there's a rebellion, when there's a coup, and you take care of the leader and his relatives of the coup, it's all over. And the people of Shechem think that's what's happened. They think everything's satisfied. They go out the next day, out into their fields to work. They're probably talking at the water cooler about Gaal. "Did you hear what happened?" And the horror of what he's... "Well, he ran his mouth too much, and so Abimelech has come." Well, that would normally be the case, but Abimelech thinks that all of them are involved. Abimelech is seething. Remember, he's a bramble. He's not too smart. He's foolish, and fire comes from him. So he's still mad, and he sets up three companies against them, and he takes them all out and destroys the city. Sows it with salt to just show how utterly devastated that it may stay desolate forever. And the people have to retreat into the stronghold of a tower. Maybe it's a cellar, but most people think it's a tower of some sort that is a stronghold that's there. And so Abimelech goes up to a hill that's wooded. He cuts down some brush. He tells the other people to follow the leader and do the same thing. They put the brush on the shoulder. They go back to the stronghold, and the bramble fire becomes a literal fire. And they kill everyone that is in the stronghold that day. The vengeful orders of a wicked ruler upon Shechem's stronghold. Finally, Number seven, the gasping pleas of a dying ruler under the Tower of Thebes. The gasping pleas of a dying ruler under the Tower of Thebes. We haven't heard anything about Thebes at this point, but apparently they're involved too, and Abimelech's fire is not yet quenched. He's still mad. So then Abimelech went to Thebes and encamped against Thebes and captured it. But there was a strong tower within the city, and all the men and women and all the leaders of the city fled to it and shut themselves in. And then they went up to the roof of the tower. And Abimelech came to the tower and fought against it and drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. It worked once. He's about to do the same thing again. And a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. You remember Sisera, right? Jael with the tent peg. A woman killed Sisera, the wicked man. Well, a woman has also killed Abimelech. But he doesn't want it. Maybe he's heard the story of Sisera too. He doesn't want this woman to be remembered like Jael. He's heard the song of Deborah that they sang and all of the rest. And he doesn't want that to be with him. And so Abimelech calls quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest they say of me, a woman killed him." And his young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, everyone departed to his home. Fire's out. Everyone's dead, essentially, except for a few. Except for a few. The gasping pleas of a dying ruler under the Tower of Thebes. And it closes with 56 and 57. Thus, God... Now, we haven't heard anything from God. And we still don't hear the name Yahweh, but it says God here returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return on their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham and the son of Jerubbaal. Now, what can we learn from this? Very quickly, let's do some conclusion and application here. The people of Israel, the Shechemites included, failed to remember God. They failed to remember Gideon. And what that means when they fail to remember them, that they fail to think that their the past good deeds that God or Gideon had done for them played no relevance for them in their present commitment or loyalties. Our gratitude, brothers and sisters, is demonstrated by our present commitment. Our present commitment, our contentment is seen. Our gratitude is seen in our lack of complaining. The decline in Israel is marked by a neglect of good faith and integrity. Good faith and truth, which is truth or integrity. We see that's the very essence of them. They didn't follow the Lord with truth or integrity. Secondly, I want you to see again that the threats to the people of God are not merely out there. The destroyers of the people of God can, if we are not watching, rise up in our midst. They can come from among us, which means we've been praying weekly for elders and leaders, right? We must choose well. We must choose well. We can't choose because someone's our relative or we like them or something like that. We must choose well. Character counts. Let us follow the direction of the Lord in choosing those who will lead over us. And I pray and ask you to pray for me as well, that we would lead well. Thirdly, I want you to see that in an empire of evil, with the leaders of Shechem and Abimelech, both sides are evil. In an empire of evil, there's no love there. They both used each other to get what they wanted. but love is not a factor among them. Very often, evil people turn on one another and do evil to one another. You're not loved, you're just useful. And when you stop being useful, you're gotten rid of. You're parted with, you're separated. So many people join the mafia, they join gangs, they join in the groups of the popular kids at school. They join in political circles, they join in worldly business ventures, and they are partners with these corrupt people, and they think, I'm accepted, I'm one of them. Well, you're one of them until you are no longer useful. And when you're no longer useful, you're parted with, sometimes in the very worst of ways. What else do we see here? We see that God is able to bring judgment upon those who seek to destroy His people. God is able to bring judgment upon those who seek to destroy His people. Why did God send the evil spirit in verse 23? It was because they had forgotten Gideon and had mistreated Gideon's family. Let that sink in for a moment. We know that Gideon was far from perfect. And yet, we see that mistreating the people of God, God cares immensely about that. And He's able to bring wrath upon those who mistreat His people, who seek to destroy His people. Moreover, God preserves His people from those who seek their destruction. God is able to save us from our Abimelechs. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 through 10. The Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. And especially those who indulge in the lust of defiling passion and despise authority. Bold and willful, they do not tremble as they blaspheme the glorious ones. The Lord is able to bring punishment upon them and to rescue the godly from trials. We do not see much from God. In conclusion, in verses 56 and 57, we see in verses 23 and 24 how He sends the evil spirit there. But God in His providence is throughout this passage. Even to an unnamed woman who carries a millstone up to the top of a tower. You don't grind grain at the top of a tower. She carried it up there for a reason. And she dropped it on his head, and God used it to hit just the right spot. Just like when Saul was killed, you remember, just a random archer pulls back his bow and releases, and it hits right in between the chink of Saul's armor. Saul was even disguised so that they did not know it was the king that was to. But God in His providence had said Saul's going to die. This was God's intent, and God is able to do this, preserve His people, use His deliverers. God's invisible hand is working throughout this entire passage. The last thing I want you to see is God has given us a king that is so much different than Abimelech. In Jesus Christ. He doesn't take, He doesn't destroy. He is a strong tower that protects us and saves us and has given Himself for us in Jesus Christ. The Lord in His sovereign hand has given us Jesus Christ, who is, yes, will punish those who are not the people of God and who will protect us. But Jesus is a so much better than a bramble. He is able rightly to stand above the trees and provide shade. more than any olive tree, He provides us with abundant life and bestows honor upon us. More than any wine, He is able to cheer our soul and to give us true and lasting joy. More than any fig, He is able to provide sweetness for us. And He protects us from the fires and the brambles of this life, the wildfires that we go through. He is able to reign and rule over the trees and to provide shade and protection for us. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.